and our teachers of the good news here are actually aren't Jesus, or at least Jesus alone, but it's these tired humans that he meets along the road. And in today's passage, I would suggest that we are taught three different times here in this story what invitation should and could look like. So let's go back to the gospel passage that we just heard. The two people on the road are Cleopas, who we know is an early disciple, and there's another unnamed person. This is a Jesus follower for sure, but that's all that we know. So let's put ourselves in their shoes. So it's the third day after their leader has died, and all of their hopes and dreams are now in the toilet. They are in full-on grief mode and probably feeling foolish and probably feeling like they wasted their time and energy with this whole Jesus thing, and probably exhausted from very little sleep, and probably scared as followers of Jesus. I mean, the authorities had just killed Jesus, right? So would they be next? So this is likely their current state of mind, and they are with each other, and they are trying to process it all. And then a complete stranger walks up and asks them what they're talking about. Now, this is what you call bad timing. So if I were them in that moment, I would be like, no thanks. We have no time for you right now. We have our own crap going on here. But instead, and really, I don't understand how they can do this in that moment, but they don't ignore him. Here's the first time we see what invitation looks like. It would have made all the sense in the world to just politely disengage. But they answer him. They invite him in, even though they could easily hide behind their grief and their fear. And I was reflecting on this. I remembered a funeral that had happened in my early days at Redeemer. After the service, there was a crowd of people in the back surrounding some very nice catered food. So from across the room, I see a man and a woman come in from the street to use the washroom. They had large bags with them, dirty and worn clothes, and presumably were living outside. So when they exited the washrooms, I watched as they stopped and looked at the beautiful tables of wonderful catered food. I could tell that they knew it was a funeral, the way they kind of whispered to each other and tried to slip through the crowd, trying to go unnoticed, which clearly wasn't going too well. They got to the tables of food and eagerly began to load up two big plates in a way that only someone that is hungry would do. I wondered if I would have to intervene. I started to walk towards them, and just before I could reach them, Glenn, the husband of the deceased, reached them first. Now, of course, Glenn had been deeply grieving that day, as one would expect. He was slumped, eyes red, clearly very tired, with a badly bruised soul. He had read the eulogy during the service and had broke down into tears. So my first thought was, oh no, he should not have to deal with this right now. I hurried over, but it was too late. Glenn said to them in a cracked voice, "Hello, I'm Glenn." And then he pointed to the hors d'oeuvres and said, "These over here, this one was my wife's favorite. Can I get you a plate?" I stopped in my tracks, realizing suddenly that my finessing of the situation was the very last thing that was needed. I then watched him gather food on plates for them. He even responded to their eagerness, like when one of them had yelled, "Oh, yum, that stuff is good. I want some more of that dip." He just chuckled and got them some more. It was the most beautiful example of allowing a stranger to enter into someone's space of grief. I thought what he taught me that day, I think it was the same thing that I'm learning from these two on the road here. Making room for invitation, even amidst our own grief. So let's go back to the road. The stranger and Jesus' followers engage. He asks them what they were talking about, and they tell him, "Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem who doesn't know the things that have been taking place these last few days?" So now the oblivious stranger is now sparking needless conversation. Another perfect entry point to say, "Okay, dude, we have had a really bad day. So if you don't mind, could you just give us a little space?" But instead, they respond again, telling him about Jesus the prophet, how he was crucified, how they had hoped he was going to change everything. They even tell him about the women who had said that his body is gone, and they have seen a vision of angels saying that he was alive. Now, here is that second example of invitation. It's an invitation in the face of their own vulnerability. To an unknown stranger, they still find in themselves the courage to bear witness to this story that means so much to them, even though by doing so, they definitely risk looking like fools. Then the stranger surprises them. He tells them how the story had to go this way, how Jesus had to die this way for it all to make sense. He paints for them a picture of why this is, going all the way back to Moses and the prophets. Now, I am sure this surprised and impressed them. I am sure it gave them a bit of comfort. But still, this isn't Jesus yet, don't forget. This is still a stranger to them that they just met on the road. It's like when you have a really thoughtful conversation with someone on the subway, and you're like, "Wow, that is really gonna stick with me." But if that same guy then said, "Hey, do you wanna come over and get something to eat?" you'd likely be immediately creeped out, and you definitely wouldn't be offering that same gesture going the other way. I make this point only to remind us of how hospitable this next part really is. So now we come up on what I would say is the third example of invitation. Verse 28 says, "As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus continued on as if he was going farther." At no point here is the stranger engaging or asking anything more from them. The interaction is clearly over. And perhaps that's how Jesus intended this to end. Perhaps the original plan of the interaction was to help these two just put into context that reason that Jesus had to die. But don't you just love when plans change? You gotta wonder if this last invitation was completely off script. So the pair see the stranger walking on, and instead of taking the clear exit to lay down and rest and get on with their grieving, they call to him. Verse 29 says, "They urged him strongly, saying, 'It's almost evening. The day is nearly over. Stay with us.'" They didn't want him to be out in the dark, unsafe, and alone. And my favorite words in the whole passage are next. They are, "And so he went to stay with them." Now, the next part is incredible. When they got into the house, the stranger took the bread, gave thanks, and gave it to them. It's then when it says their eyes were opened and they recognize it's been Jesus there with them the whole time. He disappears and they talk about the incredible encounter, realizing that their hearts had been burning within them as Jesus was recounting that story. And they walk and they walk all the way back to Jerusalem to tell everyone what they had seen. Now that is such a great ending to this story. There are at least two more sermons I can write on that last paragraph about breaking the bread, but I'll spare you a trilogy this week. But as I kept reading it over again, the thing that actually kept getting me here more than anything, my heart just kept swooning over that last little part of verse 29, "And so he went to stay with them." Because that little sentence is so full, isn't it? It shows the humanity of a risen God who had just conquered death, willingly choosing the little dirt road that leads to their home. It shows us of a God that will still allow himself to be moved and changed. A God who, even after rising from the dead, is responsive to even the humblest of invitations. Jesus is so responsive, in fact, that he lets the invitation change the rest of the story. So this leaves me wondering a few things. Imagine if we were to invite strangers, even in our grief, the way that these two do. What could invitation look like here and now? We like to invite others when we are ready, when we're feeling good, when we're put together, when our house is clean, when we're comfortable. But what could it look like to extend invitation even when those pieces aren't quite in place yet? Of course, this takes new and creative shape when we are all sheltering in place. But I do think there is still room for us to ask these questions here and now. Whether it be phone calls to the lonely person that may talk your ear off, or maybe it's a reminder that there are invitations all around us every day, even when we are stuck inside and alone. Yesterday, me and my family planted a very little garden in our shared yard, and I emailed our neighbors about sharing its bounty in 4 to 6 weeks. I was reminded that Jesus is currently calling me to care for the earth, even if it's 3 feet by 3 feet. And how this can feed me, yes, even more than repeated episodes of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I'm reminded today from the text that invitation isn't passive or reactionary. It's not only about responding to cues and requests as the two on the road demonstrated to us when the stranger first approached. Invitation is proactive. Invitation is a practice of building awareness, of paying attention, of extending, even when no one is asking for it. Even when the funeral crashers already look like they have plenty of food on their plates. Even if the guy is already walking down the road, going about his way, there's still room for invitation. But these just aren't good examples of hospitality. These two have done these acts to the risen Christ. Cleopas and his companion teach us today that without practicing consistent invitation, these two wouldn't have gotten a glimpse of the resurrection. Because this wasn't just another stranger. It was Jesus, the guy who had beat death by doing everything wrong. Instead of conquering the government, he was eating with the poor. Instead of building riches and wealth, he was drinking water with a woman at a well. And instead of riding into town on a chariot, he chose the donkey. They got to share in this because they participated in the invitation of hospitality that Jesus had been showing them in his ministry and ultimately on the cross. The invitation that these two practiced was to play host to the resurrected body of Christ. They indeed were Easter people. Amen.